right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Congrats on making out on World Cup Day. I remember getting baptized on a Super Bowl Sunday, and it was the year the Seahawks were in, and it was pretty empty baptism for me. But good work making it out here, unless you're here early to make the other service, and great, you got both. Yeah, let's start. We're talking about freedom. What a good thing that is. Let's start by praying. God, I want to invite you into this morning to really lay in our hearts the thing we need to be free. We're all coming in with something hanging on, the goods, the bads, and the in-betweens. I pray that everyone be able to leave this morning with you closer and their lives lighter. I pray this in your name by your spirit and power. Amen. All right, good morning. Last week, Robin and I went out to Alberta, did a little trip, which was wonderful. But there was something interesting that happened. As we were driving through, we went from town to town to town. I would look around, and it was great because we got to show where I grew up and she grew up. And I'd be like, oh, look at this town. It's like Enderby or it's Quesnel. And I'm like, it's pretty happening here. And then she'd look at this, and she's from Calgary, and she's like, there's nothing to do. And then we get to Calgary, and we're like in the outskirts. And I'm like, I'm kind of getting a little stressed because I'm like, man, Calgary's huge. And she's like, what do you mean it's normal? And it's because like I grew up like 20 minutes out of town in Quesnel. And you know, I grew up in the woods. So for me, I look at a town of 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people, and I'm like, you know, it's getting a little intense here. So when I moved to Coquitlam, that was a big deal. People make fun of Chilliwack for being small, but I'm like, I'm already in the big city when I was in Chilliwack. But other people, they come from that. They'll come from Calgary. They'll come from Toronto, and they'll look at Vancouver, and we're like, oh, Coquitlam's like the boonies. It's a bunch of hicks here. And so, but it's all to say that comparison is something pretty complicated. It really depends where you're coming from, where you're going from. And it's so easy to just be looking at something and just have that immediate reaction of it's big or it's small. We're really good at judging quickly on appearances. But whatever town you're from, whatever place you're from, wherever you grew up, there's always going to be a bigger place. There's always going to be a smaller place. I think I grew up in a small town, but Christine's from Queen Charlotte Island. It's like one stoplight in the whole massive island. And there's always going to be a bigger city. Oh, if you're from Vancouver, it's not Toronto. If you're from Toronto, it's big, but it's not New York. And even if you're from New York, you're not from downtown Manhattan in the big penthouse in the biggest skyscraper. And even if you're from there, there's going to be something else that is bigger and better somewhere else that you don't have. It's really easy to jump quickly to comparisons, to say this is what it is and this is what it should be. But when we play the comparison game, it's almost always a losing game. There's always going to be someone that has a better vehicle or a bigger house or a better trip or the family you want or the career that you're hoping for or the respect that you think you deserve. And when you get lost in that, it can lead to things just ramping up and up and up. And comparison and envy can quickly become rather sinister and dark. Covetousness is the 10th commandment, which sometimes it's easy to say, oh, it's the 10th commandment. It's kind of the last on the list. What's the big deal? It's not murder. But how many sins in the Bible, how many big problems start there? Cain and Abel, look at what he did. Look at the respect God showed my brother that I'm not getting. Adam and Eve, look at God and what he has. You could be like him. Comparison is the root of all sorts of trouble and evil. And in our world full of social media, where we're constantly hammered with ads targeting our insecurities and the places we feel like we don't quite have enough, it can quickly become a cage that traps and weighs and burdens us. James says in chapter 4, verses 1 to 2, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. Comparison, slowly and surely, can weave a weight and a cage that traps us into deeper sins and deeper burdens. Thankfully, it doesn't have to end there. We can find freedom. And what I'm going to say today is that freedom from comparison, from envy, from covetousness lies in God's sight. In God's sight, in his vision, and in seeing him, we find our freedom from comparison. So we're going to turn to 1 Samuel 18 for this, but we're going to be using the backdrop of the whole book of 1 Samuel to kind of go into this, because in many ways, 1 Samuel is a bit of a comparison book. It's always comparing kind of two sides, the godly side and the side trying to do things their own way in their own selves. We start with Hannah versus Peninnah competing over who's the favored wife. We go quickly to Samuel, who's a big contrast. He's compared right next to Eli, whose sons are corrupt, who cannot hear God. And we have this kid who's hearing God and who is faithful. And later on, we get to the big comparison of the book, which is the kingship of Saul versus the kingship of David. And it's all wrapped up very nicely in that verse that a lot of us are familiar with, of God looks at the heart. People judge on appearance, but God looks at the heart. And as we unravel the book of Samuel, we see again and again and again the king that looked good, that looked promising, that looked like he had everything together, was not the one that was going to lead Israel to freedom and what they were hoping for. It is the king who had God written across his heart and trusted in God's ways that would lead them to what they do. But 1 Samuel really on purpose holds them right next together. And we're going to turn to 1 Samuel 18, and we're going to see Saul is directly compared to David in this passage. And we're going to see his reaction, we're going to see Jonathan's reaction, and we're going to see how David goes through that. And all of these are going to have a bit of an answer of how we ourselves deal with comparison in our lives. So I'm going to be reading from 1 Samuel 18 from the NIV. If you have a Bible, I'll give you a second if you want to turn there. And we're going to be reading verses 1 to 16 in the Bible. This is happening right after David and Goliath. David has just defeated Goliath, probably one of the most famous stories. And now we're getting kind of what happens afterwards and how everything works out. So I'm going to be reading 1 Samuel 18, 1 to 16. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet Saul with singing and dancing and joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. And they danced and they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." But imagine, there's cymbals, it's joyous, it's raucous, it's loud. This is what they're hearing again and again in their ears. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. "They've credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me, only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did, and Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall," but David eluded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him a command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. And Saul saw how successful he was, and he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. So that's our passage today. And you can see quite quickly how just comparing yourself to someone can lead to envy and can lead to quite serious consequences in your own soul and in your own actions. Saul sees them praising David, and he's even getting praise, but David's getting more praise. He gets jealous, and then he's trying to pin him to a wall with a spear. So, how do we not get trapped into there? How do we live out of this burden, out of the comparisons that happen in this world? We're going to look at the three different characters in this story, and we're going to look at each of them, and we're going to ask questions about how they can save us. So first, we're going to look at the good, Jonathan, and what to do when the good prosper. Then we're going to look at the bad, Saul, and what to do when our enemies are the ones prospering around us. And then we're going to look at David, and we're going to look at how do we deal with others' comparisons put on us, the godly. So we're going to start with the good. Jonathan, we're going to look at Jonathan and ask, what do we do when good people are prospering around us, when we're compared to good people, to good things, when the person we're compared to is not our enemy, but our friend, our brothers and sisters, our family members? So what do we do? Well, let's look at the verse. After, what does Jonathan do after David, who has just defeated Goliath and is going into all celebration, how does Jonathan react to this happening? So let's look back at verse 1. After David finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. That's Jonathan's reaction to David getting all this success. And let's step back of a second, because we're going to talk about Saul in a little bit, but Jonathan has all the reasons Saul does to be jealous and envious of David. Jonathan is Saul's son, King Saul, his son. So he's the oldest son, so he should be next in line for the kingdom. He's the one that hasn't even gotten to the kingship yet. He's the one that's going to inherit everything. So if anything, Jonathan has even more of a threat from David coming in than Saul does. And yet, Jonathan's reaction to David slaying the Philistine, slaying Goliath, getting all this praise, being lifted up, is to say, awesome, I love you. And then he makes a covenant, he bonds to it, because he looks at David and sees someone who's following God and being raised up by God. He's saying, I want to be with him. I want to be partnered with him. I'm going to make a covenant with him. I am going to love him. Jonathan's reaction to someone who could so easily be seen as a threat or someone to be protected from, as someone to join and enter in with and to share with. And so when Jonathan looks at David, he doesn't even start to do the comparison game. He just says, wow, that person is succeeding. Great. And I'm going to offer the first solution to not getting trapped into comparison is to do exactly that. When the good people around you are doing well, awesome. Love them. That's great. Celebrate it with them. There's something really winsome when you watch after a sports game or you watch people at the top of their level, whether scientists or artists, something really winsome about when they praise one another. I know after the game that happened this weekend when Argentina beat England, a couple days ago, Harry Kane said the following after he lost. He said this: Messi is a pinnacle that no one can reach. He didn't change football, he redefined that. He looks at the loss, and I'm sure he wasn't happy, I'm sure he worked very hard, but his first response when talking to the media and the press is say, Messi's an amazing player. Like, look at how great he is. Not to tear him down, not to compare himself, but to just say, listen, I played a game, I played my best, but this guy did a phenomenal job, and I want to respect that. And I can guarantee you, the people who look at other people around them that do well and say, man, I'm going to look and I'm going to praise them, are going to go home a lot happier from the game than the person who's stewing and stewing and stewing and listening to all the fans and their complaints. Now, let's look at a more personal level. What do we do with comparison? I'm a twin. I have a twin sister. One of the most natural places to have comparison is with your family, with your brothers and sisters. I don't know about you, but it's very easy for emotions to run high and patience to run low when it comes to siblings, especially when you're younger. And when you're a twin, you're especially set up to be playing the comparison game. We were always in the same class from like grade 1 to grade 12. I think we had like 1 or 2 years where we're not in the same class together. Everything happens together, birthday parties together. We are set up in every single way to be in competition. And you know what? There's a problem. My sister's amazing. She's cool. She's great. She is, and above all, she's an amazing artist. She can make things with her hands. She can take photos. She can do drawings. And most especially, she can bake and cook like you can't believe. I could never match her prowess at making things delicious and spectacular and make it look good while she does it. Like, I can never match her. Now, I have a bit of a choice. I can do the comparison game. I can look at her and say, oh, she's a better baker than me. This sucks, right? But that's what we're so inclined to do, is when we see someone better than us, we're so inclined to see it as a threat or competition. So I can do that, and I can get bitter, and I can look at other people praising what she does and say, man, I'm unhappy about that. Or I can say, wow, she makes delicious food. Let's share into it. Let's celebrate that. Let's enjoy that. And let me tell you, one solution, which we all walk from time to time, of seeing it as a threat leads to bitterness and anger and frustration and often even like more and more serious sins. But to say it and say, I want to actually share, I want to rejoice, I want to celebrate that she has these gifts that are better than I could ever do, that ends in me eating her very delicious cheesecakes. But on a deeper level, that is the first answer to comparison. Someone is doing well if someone works really hard at their job and gets a job that you are wanting and is raised into a good position. If someone works really hard at a skill and succeeds beyond you, you can see it as a threat, or you can rejoice with them. You can share with them. And let me tell you, when I look at my sister's baking and I say, this is great, it ends in life being even better for me. And that's the first reaction we see, is John's first response is just to not even start there. It's to celebrate. It's to share in with it. It's to join in with David's success and to say, this is a good thing. David is someone who is following God. He has saved Israel. I'm going to unite. And we see throughout the story as it continues, when David succeeds, it is a joy to Jonathan. And when David has a hard time, and later when Jonathan has a hard time and his descendants have a hard time, they're there for one another and they actually have much more. And they're actually protect against threats from one another instead of being a threat to one another. So the first answer to comparison is to celebrate, to share, to rejoice. If you see that, if you look at someone who's getting something you want, or getting somewhere you would like to be, or has a trip that you would love to be on, the first response you can do is to say, great, I love you. I am so happy that God has placed you there. Man, you've done such good work. You've worked so hard. I love that, and to celebrate with them. But unfortunately, not everyone is David and not everyone is Jonathan. And the harder question of comparison comes up is, what happens when those who are getting ahead, those we're comparing ourselves to, those who seem to get everything that they don't deserve, are people that seem to be rotten? What happens when the people getting ahead are not the people who are living righteously? What happens when the people getting ahead are the people that have cheated to get there, who are not the best players? And it's a lot harder to celebrate when the person who got there by stepping on other people's heads. So what do we do when the person we're being compared to is someone who got there that way? Because I don't think celebrating that is the answer in those circumstances, and that is too often the case. So let's keep going and look at how Saul responds to the situation. I'm picking up in verse 6. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. And they danced and they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They've credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time, Saul kept a close eye on David. And just take a second. That's such an easy picture of how comparison can lead to that trap, that prison, that envy that just festers and grows and leads to sin. As he sees David being praised, he takes it as a threat. He adds on his own little interpretation of, oh, they're praising him. He basically has a kingdom already. And then he gives in. It's a little bit like that, Star Wars saying, love leads to, and this leads to, and this leads to, and this leads to. Comparison is where so many bad things can start. And he feeds it. But I want to walk forward into a question that I think is a little harder to answer than the first one, is what do we do when the good people around us are doing good? Is what do we do when the bad people around us are doing well? The bad, what do we do when it is the bad who are prospering, who are ahead of us, who seem to be doing better? So, fortunately, our Bibles are very familiar with this problem. There are a lot of Psalms that speak to it. Those moments where we are crying out. And I'm going to just take a little pieces from Psalm 73 and kind of get into that to start with. I'm reading an abridged version of Psalm 73. For I envy the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from common human burdens. They are not plagued by human ills. This is what the wicked are like. Always free of care, they go on amassing wealth. Surely in vain I have kept my heart pure, and I have washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been afflicted, and every morning brings new punishments. If you've seen the wicked get ahead, the bad people in your workplace be the ones that get the jobs, the people who are cheating and lying are the ones that are getting ahead, this is, I think, the feeling that comes out of that is, why is this happening? What's going on? What's even the point of having integrity and being honest and working hard when it's the cheaters that are the ones getting ahead? And I'm going to offer two answers to that that I think we get from God's word. The first one is, know that you don't see the inside of their success. And two, know that God does see the inside of their success. So the first thing is, that person that you see that is getting the things that you have been seeking, and they have been stomping on people to get there, know that you don't know what's going on. One author I quite enjoy is Leo Tolstoy, and he has a novella, about 100 pages, so it's a good place to start. It's not 1,600 pages like his other books. Is The Death of Ivan Ilyich, which looks at a man who's lying on his deathbed, looking back on his life. It's about 100 pages long. And he is the person that is our enemy that has gotten ahead. He's gotten a cushy job, worked his way up in the government system to like basically a managerial position. And the whole way, he's just been ignoring people, taking advantage of people, and doing everything he can to focus on himself, neglecting his family, neglecting everything else just to get what he wants and to attain what he thinks is going to be there. And he got it all. He got the role he wanted, the house he wanted, the wealth he wanted, and he's lying on his deathbed. And this scene kind of haunts me. And as he's reflecting on everything back, he starts just screaming in terror because he sees how empty it is. There's no one around him. The only person that loves him is his servant who is washing his feet, he's abused his whole life. And there's a little bit of redemption at the very end, but he's the person who on the outside looks like they got everything by taking advantage of others. But this book takes a peek inside and says all of it has been rotten and is empty, and you wouldn't for heaven and earth want to trade places with him in that moment to get everything he has. And so the first point is, that person who has done that to get there, you don't know what's on the inside. And if you were to see, I guarantee you wouldn't switch with your life of integrity and honesty. But you're not going to see that. Saul, in our story, from the outside, from everyone, we get the inside scoop as readers of the Bible, but for everyone else, all the Israelites, Saul has everything you could want. He literally got the kingdom handed to him, David had to wait another couple decades of being persecuted and hurt and going through trial after trial after trial, trying to be killed. Saul has the kingship, and yet the one who is tormented is Saul, and the one who is at peace and singing praises and writing hymns, even in the desert persecuted by Saul later on, is David. And even though Saul has everything that on the outside looks good, he is the one living in torment, having demons come into him, who cannot settle, who is flying into rages, and it is David who writes psalm after psalm after psalm that we can read. Not all of them are happy, but all of them end with some sort of peace that I think it's obvious Saul does not have. Because what is built, we can't see, but it's all there. All of their getting ahead is just getting behind. But that doesn't really help us when we see those bad people around us. It's a start. Yeah, you don't know how bad it is on the inside for them, but it's not an end. The end comes from looking at God and knowing that God sees it all too. When we keep going, we see the psalm that I read earlier, Psalm 73, gets to this. When I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply. Till I entered the sanctuary of God, and then I understood their final destiny. And then it goes on about how God is with them and how he can have hope in that. And they will fall and they will be taken down. And so my answer to you is God sees it. So if you're struggling with someone who's in your life who is bad and getting ahead, and you see them, you're comparing yourself to them and you're saying, how is this going? Cry out to God, because God does see it all. God sees it, trusting God's sight. This is maybe the thing that David is best at in the story. Time and time again, Saul will try to kill David on multiple occasions, and yet when David stumbles into a situation where Saul is right in front of them, vulnerable, it's his for the taking, David says, I am not going to do anything to Saul. I'm not going to touch him. I'm going to let God take care of it, and God does. And David does get the kingdom, and he is vindicated. But don't take that trait of Saul in front of you and take it into your own hands, because then you just take Saul's place. And Saul is the one who is tormented. Saul is the one who is writhing and suffering and living in the chains of comparison. It is David, even while persecuted, even while being attacked, even while on the run, even while not having a home, that is free. And the freedom of David is so much better than the captivity of Saul, even if it comes with the kingship. Finally, I'll say this. God cares, and God does also act. If people are being unjust, God sees it. You can take it to him and trust him to deal with it. Nothing goes outside of his sight. This is where the imprecatory psalms, the psalms that are saying, bring this down on my enemies, and you read them, and you're a little like, ooh, sometimes. And other times, you're like, oh, yeah, do that. God sees what's happened to your enemies, and he actually just gives us words to bring that to him. But bring it to him. Let him deal with it. Live free of this comparison that can just fester inside. Let God deal with it. Let him excise it. He is the surgeon who is trained to deal with it. You are the patient who is troubled. Don't try to self-operate. You don't have the skills. God is the one who can take it all, clean it all out, make it all work and end in a way that leads to peace and freedom. So, what do you do when the bad prosper? One, no, you don't know the whole story. And no one who is bad, we see a lot of verses on this, all of their wealth is going to fade. All of that they have is ultimately empty. You don't see that, but know that their getting ahead is not what it looks like on the outside. And know that God sees everything. And first, that he is with you, and he sees you, and he will vindicate you. And second, that he is a God that puts things right. And if you're really struggling, tell God, but tell it to God. Tell God, take this on. I'm so angry. I am so hurt. This person is doing so much evil. But let God be the surgeon. Let him be the one. Trust in his sight, not yours. It's what David does, and he is the one who is free. So Those are two stories, looking at Saul, looking at Jonathan, and how do we deal with our comparison to others, the good and the bad. Now we're going to look at the godly. And we're going to come at this from the asking the question, what do we do? Because what do we do when other people are comparing us? What do we do about other people's comparisons to us? Because we can control a lot about what happens in here. But what about our parents always comparing us to this person? What about our friends always comparing us to this? What about online, how there's this constant game being played of I did this and I did this and I did this, and it's this competition, whether it's parenting or travel or work or money. What do we do about the other people looking at us, comparing us to the world? And so we're going to look at the last couple of verses of this and look at how David and Saul act to one another, and then we're going to learn a bit from that. So I'm going to pick up from verse 12. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away and gave him a command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. So here, David does nothing wrong. He does everything right. He literally defeated the biggest enemy the Israelites had. And what ends up happening is he loses his job. He's put into the command of the army, and then Saul gets jealous, and he's thrown out right away. Maybe something like that has happened to you, where someone's jealous, or you're doing the right thing, or you're the honest person, and someone else is jealous, and you get really seriously hurt or consequences from that. We can control what's in here, but other people are going to get jealous. Other people are going to be comparing. So what do we do when that starts reaching into our lives? What do we do? Rejoicing with good things happening to other people's is great, really good for your heart. Calling to God and trusting God's sight when the wicked around you are doing well, that's awesome. That's really going to help you here, but it's not going to do anything about them. Saul's still going to be out there, jealous and steaming. So what do we do about Saul on the outside? Well, we follow David. We seek God. We walk with God. Unfortunately, there's no answer that's going to escape hardship in our lives. Other people are going to be envious. Parents are going to compare us to how they parent their kids. Others are going to look at how you act or how your family acts, and they're going to have their thoughts. People are going to judge you based on how you dress, where you live, how you talk, what you do for work. It's inevitable. David loses his position to Saul's jealousy. You may lose your job. You may have people talk bad about you behind your back. You may be excluded or cut out from important groups because of others' jealousy. That may have already happened to you time and time and time again. I mean, Jesus says, birds have nests, foxes have dens, but the Son of Man has nowhere to rest his head. That's what happened to Jesus. So how do we go on? How do we escape the comparison game if others are the people doing the comparing? We have the answer here. In everything David did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. It's because the Lord was with him. That's where the vindication comes. So, step back a bit. We need to start winning. People play the comparison game all the time. And I said at the beginning it's a losing game. But there's actually a way to stack the deck and always win. Okay? There's a way to cheat. You guys ready? So we just came out of the story of David and Goliath. And what I like to tell kids about the story of David and Goliath is imagine Messi and Ronaldo was playing against 2 5-year-olds. Okay? How's that going to go? I think we have an inclination of what direction that's going to go. That's a really good picture of David versus Goliath. But who is the 5-year-old in this scenario? Goliath is a 5-year-old, right? What? No, he's the big tall guy. He's got armor. He looks super impressive and tall. No. David's a 5-year-old. Goliath is a 5-year-old because he's going up against God. And that's how David is looking at it. He's not looking at it as little old me versus that. It's not, I'm small, but I can defeat him. It's, oh, Goliath is an idiot. He's going against the God who defeated Pharaoh, who parted the sea, who could control the weather. What's he doing? It's like a five-year-old trying to beat Messi and Ronaldo together. It's just not going to work. And so if you're playing the comparison game, but you bring God into sight, everything starts to change. And the game, you start to win every single time. Because who can threaten that? You're not going to bring a player who can ever compete with both of them together, you know? You're not going to find a situation where God is not the ultimate victor. And so how do we deal with comparison? We keep God in sight. We bring God into the vision. If you're up against a literal, like, 8-foot man who's trying to fight you, but then you bring God in, all of a sudden they look pretty small. It's like at the beginning, it's always a bigger town and a smaller town. It just depends what you have as your basis. If you bring God into the picture, everything starts to have an entirely different perspective. So, how do we deal with comparison of others? Find something that is incomparable. In our case, we have God, we have Jesus, we have his love. So, God is, he's the answer. Look at him. I mean, let's just take stock for a second. Look at any aspect of God, and it just outmatches whatever you're up against. And what I love about the Bible is we see so many different sides to God. There's so many different ways that we see God working and loving. God's closeness. He's dwelling with us. If your problem is loneliness, if people are isolating you, we have a God that is incomparably close, who dwells within us. And so there's a way forward where we can never be alone. If your problem is the weather, you have a business and the weather is just messing you up and people across the country are having a way better time because of whatever industry you're in, God's the one who controls that. He can sleep in a storm and speak and make it go quiet. If what you're up against in the world is a popularity contest, or people always comparing, or people looking at ahead, who's the one who's truly on top? Who's the one who is going to have the whole universe proclaiming his name at the end? It's God. No matter what your struggle is in your life, whatever what you are being compared to, whatever what people are bringing up against you, God can match it and then go way over. And there's no answer to all of this without God. You need God. You're not going to find it somewhere else. If you don't have God in the picture, people are going to hurt you, and there's not really going to be a way to fully make it right. But with Jesus, there doesn't matter what you're up against. He is the one who is beyond comparison, and he can make it right. There's no hurt that he can't ultimately heal. There's no isolation that he can't ultimately bring home. There's nothing in here. There's nothing out there that can't compare with God's love and care and power for us. So keep God in sight. The last thing I'd say is remember how God sees you. Remember how God looks at you. Because the last and maybe the biggest comfort for me is God's not playing the comparison game with us. He's not holding us against some perfect picture and saying, become that. No one can live up to him anyway. Like, we can't even start with God trying to compare ourselves to him, but God doesn't ask us to do that. Let how God sees you be what rules your life. He sent his son who died on the cross because he loved us. He didn't ask us to get to any standard to get there. He said, I'm going to do it for you. I'm not going to compete. I don't see you as a threat. Actually, I'm going to let you share into what I'm doing. I'm going to let you speak on my behalf as Christians. I'm going to bring you in. He doesn't play the game. He sees you as a daughter. He sees you as a son. You're not a threat. You're brought into a covenant with him, with the God of the universe, who sent his son to die so you could live. And in that is hope in all things. And whatever your parents or your friends or your kids or your colleagues or the people on the internet are looking at you and comparing you to, know that God's sight is on you. And what he said is, I love you so much, I'll die for you. And I'll make everything right. And you can join into his family and have eternal security in that. So, what do we do? What do we do with comparison? What do we do when we look around and we see good people doing well? We celebrate. We share. My sister is good at this. Amazing. Your colleague worked really hard on a project and got a lot of praise for it. Great, get them a donut. Someone gets a job or a house or a trip or something you've really been wanting. Awesome, you wanted it because it was a good thing. Good. What do we do when the bad are doing well, though? The people who gets those things are someone who has been stomping on people to get there. First, know that you don't see the inside. And the inside of someone who's doing that is rotten. Saul is a tormented king, and David is the one living in freedom, even though he's the one on the run. And Saul is the one with the kingdom. And know that God does see it, and God does know, and nothing's going outside of his account. And if you can't get to the point where you can come to peace with what's going on out there, take it to God and tell him, because he listens and he sees you and your struggle as well, and he will take that end for you. And he can be the surgeon, and he can be the one to deal with that for you. Finally, what do we do with other people playing the game with us? What do we do with when other people are hurting us? And we can't do anything about other people's hearts. Well, walk with God. Keep God in sight. There's nothing they can do that can outweigh God. Goliath is the five-year-old. Those things against us are the five-year-olds going up against messy. And I don't want to say messy is God. God is way beyond messy. God is way beyond anything that we can come to. And no, God sees us, and he's not comparing you to anything. In him, we are sons and daughters. And while of course we should be treating each other with love and honor and respect and the things he calls us to do, we don't need to do anything to get in. We don't need to do anything to get there. God says, come to me, all who are weary, and I will give you rest. And he's not playing games. He's not comparing you to others. He loves you as you are. And so, rejoice with those who are doing well. Cry out to God when those people who are not great are getting what they shouldn't. And know how God sees you and keep God in sight. And in those ways, we can be free from comparison. So with that, let us pray. Dear God, thank you for how good you are, how incomparable your love is to us. Pray that as we go, that we would have eyes that look like yours, where we don't go on appearances, but we rejoice when those are doing good. We rejoice with the good. We cry out to you and we look for your sight in the bad. And that we would live based on you in sight and look at ourselves with the way you look at us. And I pray in that all of us here will be able to leave today into our weeks and into the rest of our lives to have this freedom from comparison. In your name, amen. All right, you guys can stand as we go and worship.
I'm going to invite the prayer team to come forward. If you want to respond in prayer at all, feel free to come forward and just stand at the front with your hands out, and our prayer team would love to pray a blessing prayer over you. Let's respond in song.
Worthy of every song we could ever sing. Worthy of all the praise we could ever bring. Worthy of every breath we could ever breathe. We live for you. for you. Jesus, the name above every other name. Jesus, the only one who could ever save. Worthy of every breath we could ever breathe. We live for you. We live for you.
If you don't have your eyes on something worth more, you will fall victim to comparison. It's inevitable. Success will fade, flowers will die out, nations are gonna fall apart, jobs will end, cars will rust, faces will wrinkle, and bodies will sag. Build your life on Jesus. It is Jesus that is without compare. In him and in his sight, there is no comparison, and you can be free. So I invite you today, turn to Jesus, know his love, and be free. Go in peace.